Today is my third and last day giving class here before the month of Purushottama starts tomorrow. On our calendar it says today, doesn't it?
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow, yes, tomorrow. And I think today they're having a program begins today, Holy Name Week. And there's, seems like 30, 40 different devotees who will be all chanting continuously for over the course of the week. It's all available online. This is something we've, I guess, established in ISKCON recently. When I was thinking about Holy Name Week, I always remember when here in Vrindavan it was, when someone asked Prabhupada, because here in Vrindavan, of course, there's also various festivals that are done. Some of them are all over with everyone, and some of them are special here in Vrindavan. And when the devotee asked Prabhupada, is today a festival day for us? And of course, Prabhupada's response was, every day is a festival in Krishna consciousness. So Holy Name, of course, when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, this is what he was giving for all of us, Holy Name. I remember when I joined 1971, I started out in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was a large city in the USA, in Pennsylvania, near New Vrindavan. But our program every day was the Holy Name. As Prabhupada said in one letter, everyone should go out on the Harinam party. Every day, he said, you can leave one person back at the temple. And that would be the pujari taking care of the deities. He said, otherwise, everyone should be out on the Harinam party. And of course, this is what we did mostly, at least 6-8 hours a day. Some places, 10-12 hours a day. I mentioned before, we know how the devotees like Vishnu John Swami, other devotees, they would tape pennies onto their fingers because their fingers would crack in the winter, in the summer, in the winter, in the fall, always just chanting the Holy Name. Being with Prabhupada, of course, you always got to see how Prabhupada was also chanting the Holy Name under all different conditions. So many things happened especially in New Dwarka. New Dwarka, the quarters were set up in such a way that I was actually with Srila Prabhupada. You know, it's not in his room. He had a sitting room and he had a bedroom. But Prabhupada liked to walk around. He, other than just sitting in the chair anytime through the morning, the afternoon, the evening, we would sometimes say pace, but he would walk about through all his rooms. And one of those rooms at the end was the servants' quarters. Servants' quarters, again, it had a door. You never closed your door. For some reason, it was just something that you knew. Your door wasn't closed because Prabhupada could walk by at any time and he would just see what you were doing as he had his hand in his bead bag. Sometimes I would be cleaning, sometimes cooking, sometimes chanting, sleeping, yes. But that was also very nice. He came in there in the winter time. In the winter, sometimes in March, he would be in Los Angeles. It could get very cold, just like here in the winter. The mornings could be very cold and damp. And in the course of traveling, as I mentioned with Prabhupada, just like at the airport, if you opened up Prabhupada's suitcase, everything was in there. You were prepared for any situation. The cooker was there. Of course, all his clothing was there. Chadar was there. His straw mat was there for the massage. It wasn't that you went from one place to another expecting to find something. So you had to be ready for all situations. But as a servant for myself, I didn't have many belongings, just a few dhotis, a few kurtas. And as you would go from warm place to cold place, sometimes it could be difficult. So yes, one time Prabhupada, early in the morning, he was walking around and he saw me lying on the floor on a straw mat. And next to me on the floor, there was a gas hookup. You know, you would say like propane hookup. So that hook was hooked up to a stove, a two-burner stove, just like we would do here in India. You just have the two burners. Because he made my room, the kitchen as well. Prabhupada understood us as young men, his servants. His servants were always in danger. And especially in New Dwarka. In New Dwarka, as I said, that was our big grihastha community. So one of the first things Prabhupada did when I became his servant in Los Angeles, and I was having to go to the temple kitchen every day to cook, and he said, told Karunder, you arrange that his room can be a kitchen. So they bought me full-size refrigerator. The room was small, but in the corner of the room now I had a refrigerator. And on the floor, that gas propane line, they hooked up to a two-burner stove. So my room was the kitchen. And his idea was, with the room being the kitchen, that would protect me from any possibility of interacting with the young ladies in the temple, because that's how he had lost his previous servant, in the kitchen. It was more cooking than just sabjis in the kitchen. So one night, as he was walking by, I had turned the gas stove on just to keep warm in my room. It was that cold. Prabhupada's rooms had heaters and everything, but the servant quarters over on the side didn't have that facility. So I had the two burners on very low, flames coming, just to try to keep warm. And then Prabhupada walked by, and of course I would just hear his feet in slippers. You know, you could hear the sound. Prabhupada had slippers he would wear as he walked around. So you could hear him shuffling. So as he stopped in front of me, and he would have his hand in his bead bag, chanted very softly. Not loud. He was very soft. And he looked at me and he said, "You don't have a blanket?" And of course, I didn't have a blanket. So all I had was my chadar that I would use. So I just said, "No. No, Prabhupada." So then he would immediately go to my almoire. He said, "Take a blanket." Inside there, blankets were there, sweaters were there. The devotees would give him over the time. So I went in and there was this beautiful quilt. It was satin or silk finish on the outside, very shiny, very warm. So he said, take whatever you want, you know, take whatever you need. So of course I grabbed the prettiest one. I said, "This okay?" "Yes," he said. So then I was using that. And then again, I was brahmachari, I had these friends, I told you about there in New Vrindavan, or in Los Angeles. They're the ones convinced me to go to Mangal Artik one morning, and I got in trouble. But now they're saying, "Come take rest in the temple room, we're taking rest in the temple room." So the same thing, I would say, I have to be upstairs. Somehow or other, they convinced me one night, take rest in the temple room. So I brought my little straw mat down, and now I had this quilt. They were all, if they had anything at all, they were just these sleeping bags. This is 1972, 1973. We were very austere. I remember in the different temples in Los Angeles, you had to get up very early in the morning because no one owned anything. You didn't own your socks. You didn't own your dhoti, a kurta, if they even existed at that time, or t-shirts. Every day, one or two of the brahmacharis would stay back and go to the laundromat, which was right next to the temple. They would wash all the clothing for all the devotees. It was communal. So then they would throw it in this bin. So the earlier you got up, better your chance was of having a nice dhoti and kurta to wear. And the later you came, then you had less possibility of wearing anything. That's why you would see the devotees with two different chappals, you know, two different colors. Yeah, it was a merge. And I would have to, of course, use those same facilities. And I can remember standing in line. Now imagine there's 100 devotees at the temple, and there's one shower, one bathroom, and there would be a line of all these semi-naked men standing in the cold, waiting to take their turn to shower. With one or two people, you would hear screaming in the shower because there was no hot water. There was a hot water tap, but the temple president, he would remove those so you couldn't use the hot water. Right? That's the temple presidents. They were very cruel. In New York City, just like here, you have the water towers and the big water things on top of the roofs. Well, it was the same thing in New York. Everywhere you had the water tower. Of course, there it goes below freezing. And the way they kept the water from freezing was there was just like a fan, you know, like a propeller that would be in the water and constantly turn. And that kept the ice-cold water from freezing. In New York City, I was with Prabhupada going into those showers, screaming. The people would go in the showers literally for 30 seconds. You couldn't put soap on because it wouldn't come off. The water was so cold. So they would go in, and this ice-cold water was below freezing. 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, this water coming down. So this was our holy name. This is what we did so we could chant the holy name. These were not things Prabhupada instituted, but somehow or other as it filtered down, many austerities were there. There was the six chickpea rule. Eight chickpeas. You are only allowed 8 chickpeas. Somehow or other, that became a law. I remember when I joined. Otherwise, you know, you get sex agitation eating too many chickpeas, too much protein in your diet. Now, Prabhupada wasn't aware of these things. Prabhupada was very practical with all of us. But anyway, I had this blanket that night, and now I'm lying. 3 or 4 of us are lying there. Good friends I had in L.A. I was from Philadelphia. They were from Brooklyn, New York. So we felt very close in that way. Being in Los Angeles, which people were very different on the West Coast, on the East Coast we had a certain way that we were. So as soon as they saw that blanket, of course they said, "Where did you get this quilt, you know?" And of course I told them, Prabhupada gave it to me. And then immediately I could see that in the eyes, that, really, that's Prabhupada? He said, yes. So by the end of the night, when I left in the morning, I gave it to one of them because I felt, you know, I could feel that desire that they had. And I regularly did that. Prabhupada would give me things and I always just gave it away. And like I say, on the computer, I'm a delete. My favorite button's the delete button. You know, you can't see the letters on the delete button. I'm always deleting things. And I was with Prabhupada, I had that mentality as well. Because I knew we were traveling. You only had one suitcase, so there wasn't a question of accumulating things. Anyway, it was the very next night. You know, 2-3 nights later, Prabhupada's walking around. I'm lying on the floor, I've got the gas burners up, and I don't have a blanket again. And he woke me up, he said, "Where is the blanket?" I said, "Prabhupada," I said, "I gave it away." He just shook his head. He said, "Go to the Elmira," he said, "get another one," he said, "and don't give it away." I said, yes, Prabhupada. So then I went and got a nice wool blanket. Everything was saffron in Prabhupada's closet. Of course, I don't know where that blanket ended up either. It was given away a long time ago. I don't regret giving Prabhupada's items away. And the same thing happened in Atlanta. We were on the morning walk. That's the famous, when Prabhupada spent 3 days in Atlanta. Those famous days, the beginning of March 1975. And it was very cold in Atlanta. And Prabhupada was observant. Like I said, Prabhupada saw everything. He didn't make a spectacle at the time, but he would observe things. Sometimes he would say things to devotees in New Vrindavan. He did it in Los Angeles, coming down for the morning walk. Those same devotees in L.A. waiting for Prabhupada to come out the door, and they're shivering. They don't have anything. They don't own anything. There's no money, not a penny. Only your beads and your bead bag. Like, even your clothing wasn't yours, just whatever you could get that day. So they're waiting for Prabhupada to come in the morning walk. No one even has a sweatshirt on. And they don't even think about it. They were transcendentalists, these people. Prabhupada had turned these people into complete transcendentalists. And they're just standing there as all they're thinking is they're going to see Srila Prabhupada when the door opens. So then the door would open, Prabhupada would come out, everyone's offering obeisances. In Los Angeles, he turned to Kurandar. He said, why don't they have sweater, coat? He said, see that they have what they need. He said, see that they're taken care of. In New Vrindavan, he did the same thing. He didn't have things. We didn't care. Most of the devotees, they didn't want anything. As all they wanted was 24-hour service, chanting. It was Holy Name Week. It was a lifetime, Holy Name lifetime, we were thinking, when we joined. So in Atlanta, the same thing. After his class, the whole walk went on. I was wearing some Indian chappals, even with the little ring around the big toe, the big fancy ones I got on the last trip to India. So after breakfast, then up in his room, and Prabhupada rang the bell. He said, do you have socks? Because he saw I had a chadar, but I was barefooted. It was like 3-4 degrees Celsius, you know, like 35-40 degrees. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, go to my almira. Every room and every city was the same. We did everything just like Vrindavan. Prabhupada had his bed, had his cushion on the floor, a little desk in front of it. That was his room. He didn't have big grand rooms with sofas and dining room tables. None of these things were there. He lived a Vrindavan lifestyle. So, but he had the almira, locking everything. Prabhupada always, and you always locked it. Kept everything locked. So he said, go to Elmira and get some socks. His socks. I said, Prabhupada, I said, I can't wear your socks. He said, it's okay if I say you can do it. You can do it. So as soon as he got permission, and I wanted to anyway the first time, but I had to refuse. That was etiquette. He said, if I say it's okay, he said, it's okay. So I went and I got these pretty socks, nice warm socks. And then he said, the others, at the time, the others were Nitai and Paramahamsa, secretary, my good friend. And he said, do they have socks? I said, no, Prabhupada. We had just come from warmer places. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, well, get them some socks as well. Said, I have like a half a dozen pair of Prabhupada's socks. Then he just kept looking. He said, do you have shoes? Because he saw I was wearing sandals, open sandals. So immediately I said, Prabhupada, I said, it's not possible I can wear your shoes. And again he looked, he said, if I say it's okay, it's okay. And then he said, Well, the spiritual master's present, he said you can use his items. He said, but after he's gone, he said, then they become worshipable. He said you can no longer use them, he said, simply on the altar like that. So I was so happy. And I went, and they were shoes that had just been given to Prabhupada. He wore them on the morning walk. But I don't think they fit him properly. So then he offered them to me. So I had, you know, it was just like Christmas morning for us. You know, in the West, Christmas was a lot of presents. So I feel like I have all these presents in my hands from Prabhupada. This was the nectar when you were with Prabhupada, was him taking care of you. See, this is what he did. He took care of you. This is why we could stand in the cold, waiting for him to come out the door. Why you could take a shower with water that was below freezing to go to Mangalartik in a dhoti that you didn't own. Because you knew he cared. He was still giving us everything. And you'd do anything for him. So then, of course, I walked back to the room. And I already knew what was going to happen. As I walked in and they saw these things, I said, look what Prabhupada gave me. And immediately, you know, Nitai, you can't use those Prabhupada's socks. I said, okay. I said, well, some of them are for you. Then immediately, oh, okay. Because they could also use them. In Los Angeles, Prabhupada, he would walk around chanting japa. He gave me a lot of japa instructions in Los Angeles because we were basically in the same area, just like here in Vrindavan was the same. Prabhupada would walk to the bathroom, he would go right through the servants' quarters. So in Los Angeles, as he would walk around, I would be seeing him all the time as he was walking. And that was when this Juhu, I spoke about Juhu yesterday. This was one of Prabhupada's big headaches. And imagine, he's halfway around the world and he's getting letters and telegrams saying Mr. Nair is doing this and this is happening and this was going on. So he would be so disturbed to think that we were losing this land. So then one evening he was walking around and I could hear him. Couldn't hear him so much his voice, I could hear the beads in his bead bag. And he stopped right in front of me, and that's what he said, when you're in anxiety, he said, you chant on the beads. He said, very loud, you can chant very loudly, but I could hear him chanting on the beads. Then he would go around, he was just walking through his room chanting. Then he went around again, and he said, if you're tired, he said, and you have rounds to do, he said, this is what you do. You simply walk around, he said, and you chant. He said, if you're feeling tired. And then he said, as a grahasta, he said, I would finish 16 rounds. He said, 4 rounds in the morning. He said, and then 4 rounds before each meal. He said, and if you don't finish those 4 rounds, you can't eat that meal. He said, in this way, he said, you'll get your 16 rounds done, because everyone wants to take prasadam. And then while this was going on, this Juhu business, again, it was in the afternoon, and he called me into his room. I went in, offered obeisances. I was just sitting before him and he was standing, again with his hand in his bead bag. He said, you Westerners. He said, you Westerners. He said, if it wasn't for the chanting of Hare Krishna, he said, you couldn't accomplish anything. He said, so much intoxication, so much illicit sex you've had. He said that you couldn't do anything. He saw us being basically brain dead. He would use words like that, brain dead. If you were his servant or secretary, sometimes you would get complimented in this way. You have cow dung for brains, he would say. You have no brain. again in New Dwarka, that same room that was my kitchen, wasn't the first time. It was one of the very times he really raised his voice. Like I say, he only yelled, raised his voice at me a few times in over 2 years. But when he did, it was very penetrating. Prabhupada could really yell. And as he was walking around, and I was preparing his lunch in that little room, which meant I had a, just like India, I had a little burner on the floor, and in front of me I had a little table. There were just two cinder blocks with a piece of wood across it. That was my kitchen, and a bucket of water, because there was no water. It was a bedroom. And this is how I did everything. And Prabhupada, like I say, he always saw, always observing. And he was walking, and he stopped as I was cutting vegetables to put into the cooker. And he yelled. And he said, immediately called me a malecha. You malecha, he said. Look, he saw it. It was just a small can, like a little trash can. And somehow or other, from the angle, he saw orange peels in it. They were his orange peels. Gradually, as time went by, my very first Maha Prasadam I had from Srila Prabhupada, given to me by Nanda Kumar, was an orange peel. And there was still some pulp on the peel. So I ate the pulp, and then I looked at the peel, and I ate the peel. So if you've ever eaten an orange peel, they're not very tasty. Even the monkeys won't eat an orange peel. But that was my very first Mahaprasadam, was an orange peel from Prabhupada's plate. So now it's a year later, I'm in the kitchen, and I distribute Prabhupada's Maha, but somehow or other, no one took these orange peels. And I also wasn't eating orange peels. So I dropped it in the can right in front of me in my room. So when Prabhupada came, he saw those orange peels in the can. You nonsense. He said, you're supposed to be a Brahmana? He said, and you have eaten trash? He said, eaten garbage? He said, in the can? And you're cooking for the deities? And he didn't say, I'm cooking for him, because whatever we're cooking for the deities. He always brought everything right up to the highest level. Huh? He said, you're cooking for the deities and you have this rubbish in there? He said, you're such a rascal, he said, this garbage, you malecha. He said, you have no brain cells. Initially I said it was from your plate. That didn't matter. He said, how can you be cooking for the deities with this in there? And I would just freeze. I never knew what to say. And I knew what to say. Nothing was the best thing to say. Because you could never offer a reason or an excuse to Prabhupada. Huh? Like Paramahamsa Swami, when Prabhupada said, why are you sleeping? He said, oh, Prabhupada, we had all the flying for 20 hours. I have jet lag. Oh, when I heard Paramahamsa say those words, I thought, oh no, why did you do that? Prabhupada looked at him. Jet lag. He never even heard this word before, jet lag. He said, you're a sannyasi, pointed to him. He said, your business is eating less, sleeping less. So the more you tried to give a reason, the worse it became. It didn't get better. Then he would really just... So I just looked, said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, you're such a fool. Yes, Prabhupada. But that also didn't satisfy him. He would go on and on. Do they do that in the temple kitchen? And again, I made a mistake. I said, well, they have a trash can in the kitchen. Do they put eaten garbage in it? No, Prabhupada. Then why are you doing this? Yes, Prabhupada. And again, my wife knows this, I don't understand the word I'm sorry. It's not a word that comes out of my mouth. And even with Prabhupada, whenever he chastised me, I could never bring myself to say, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. I would just become quiet. My brain, actually, I would get brain dead, brain fog. My brain would just shut down. And I didn't know how to respond, so I generally wouldn't say anything. So no, I said, they don't do that in the temple. Yes. Anyway, then he would just walk off. So the afternoon he called me in the room. He said, you're devotee, you Westerners, his Western disciples. He said, such nonsense. He said, if it wasn't for this chanting, you couldn't accomplish anything. Then he looked at me. He said, none of my disciples believe Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, Prabhupada. Then he would get letters, and he got a letter. It was Kartik time. And that was it. Once he started chastising, it could go on. He said, in Mayapur, sannyasi with their beards. He wrote them. He said, you shaved this. He said, only, he said, is a sex attraction. He said, growing this hair. All for sex attraction. Prabhupada shaved all the time, very regularly. There's one or two photos you'll see, and some devotees, they like to post them and even emphasize his whiskers to show sometimes Prabhupada could go 2-3 days. I could go 2-3 days. We all know it was right here, right? 1976, 77, he gave one class. He said every fortnight, clean shaven, anyone living in the town, clean shaven every fortnight, minimal. This was Prabhupada's program. We have so many programs. This is a nice program. This Harinam, what was it, the chanting going on, especially during this time. So he told them, Jaipataka Swami, when he was there, it was Kartik time, what are you doing? He saw Jaipataka, chanting 64 rounds. Why are you chanting 64 rounds? He said, chant your 16 rounds and go preach. This is always what pleased Prabhupada. I was saying, you never went into Prabhupada's room. He never asked you, are you chanting? Did you finish your 16 rounds? That was a vow, huh? That's a vow we made, chanting our rounds, following the regulative principles. He would say, what service are you doing? He was always interested to see what our service was, how we were helping them spread this Krishna consciousness. And we know, look at some of these senior disciples, so advanced. Her only business distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. He said, what can you say in 2-3 minutes to someone? What can we say? He said, but if you give them a book, you'll change their whole life. Every morning I would wake up 1-2 o'clock in the morning to the sound of Prabhupada's voice as he sat there with that dictaphone machine. He knew as a society, it was difficult. Prabhupada always encouraged us so much. I remember in those days, and I think most of us, Prabhupada made us feel we were going to be Krishna conscious in this very lifetime. We were all going back home, back to Godhead. He made it seem so easy that we were all headed there. But then there was that other side. He said, my disciples. And one said, Prabhupada, we're your puppets. I say it all the time. He said, yes, but I want you to go like this. And you're going like this. He was dealing with big, big personalities. Big, big egos. Big, big false egos. They battled one another. Prabhupada would have to somehow or other get them to work cooperatively. That is one of our very big famous quotes. We say Prabhupada said, after I leave, your ability to work cooperatively. This is what he wanted to see. Because together we can do so much. He said, individually, how much can anyone do? He said, but together so much can be done. Here in Vrindavan, again, you're so fortunate to be here in Vrindavan. I was telling you yesterday, Prabhupada yelled at me, Surab Prabhu. Prabhupada constantly would give him so much. And Surab was very eager to serve. He came back. And this I see with all of Prabhupada's disciples, his servants, no matter what happened to them later on. We lost Upendra. Upendra Prabhu, he was my very good friend, Upendra. In 1977, I came here in the middle of August, August 17th, 1977. I stayed for 2 weeks. Unfortunately, I only stayed 2 weeks. As soon as I came, Upendra was so happy. He said, you can help with the service. Every day we would massage Prabhupada with the sponges. We had those natural sponges. And at that time, of course, he wasn't using oil anymore. Just powder, talcum powder. So I'd help massage in that way. Of course, after Prabhupada left, Upendra, he left. Sudama, Prabhupada's servant. Sudama, when Japan was in Japan, Prabhupada said, whoever opens up center in Japan, Lord Chaitanya will personally take him back home, back to Godhead. Sudama said, I'll do it, Prabhupada. Eager to do it. What happened? Sudama was also gone. Like Upendra. He was like Upendra for years. And both of them, when their last months came, they suffered a lot in diseases. But everything came to them. Sudama was wound up right in the temple in Los Angeles, right across the street, cared for by the devotees. Prabhupada was there constantly in his ear. Prasadam was there. 24-hour-a-day care was there. When he left, it was evident Srila Prabhupada was right there with him. Upendra, the same thing. He had been dying. They almost didn't let him on the aeroplane. But he got to Australia. In Australia, he was loved by so many devotees. He helped open up that entire continent for Srila Prabhupada in the Pacific Rim. Prabhupada took care of him at the end. He didn't see any faults. Prabhupada didn't see our faults. This is a pure devotee. Prabhupada saw how much service they did, how much they had helped him. And Prabhupada saved them. I told you, even with the chanting, Prabhupada saw you were chanting, you weren't chanting, you were helping. I told you with the GBC, his secretary, after he left, he was GBC in England, Bhaktivedanta Manor, the place George Harrison got. But so many devotees in the temple, they were criticizing him. All so much gossip was going on. He's not chanting his rounds. Who knows if he's even following the principles. He's wasting money, renting cars. They were just waiting for Prabhupada to come. And as soon as Prabhupada came, I was up in Prabhupada's room. Sannyasi was there, Ribadi Nandan Swami. And the temple president was there. Temple, this was 1973, so the temple president, he was a devotee for 2 years, 2.5 years or so. Ribadi Nandan came a little earlier in the late 60s. And they wanted to see Prabhupada, so I told Prabhupada. Prabhupada's sitting behind his desk. He had just arrived, just hours before. Big, beautiful room, sitting room in Bhaktivedanta Manor, so they sit down. As soon as they offer obeisances, they sit up, and the temple president, he couldn't wait to start talking. Srila Prabhupada, our GBC, he's not chanting his rounds. He said, "In we don't know what he's spending money in." Told you, Prabhupada could just see this boy was seething. Prabhupada looked at him. Then he looked at Rabadi Nandan Swami. He said, "Tell him to leave." He wouldn't look at the devotee criticizing his disciple who had done so much. He didn't look at him anymore. He said, "Tell him to leave." Offered his obeisances and left. Then Rabadi Nandan Swami, in a more objective way, said, "Prabhupada, it's true." He said, "Everyone knows it." He said, "It's clear he doesn't chant rounds." And Prabhupada looked at him. He said, "Arjun," he said, "he was fighting a war, battle of Kurukshetra." He said, "He wasn't chanting rounds." He said, "He was busy fighting." He said, "So he may be so busy, he's finding it difficult to chant his rounds, huh?" He said, "Anyway," he said, "you encourage him to chant." He said, "And in that way," he said, "it'll be okay." But he didn't like us finding fault in one another, looking at those faults. We all know, we all hear these things, we know all the analogies, the fly and the bees. Prabhupada was a bee. Prabhupada looked at us. Devotees would say to me, "When I stand before Prabhupada, when I sit before him, he must see all the darkness, all my sinful activities, my black soul." They would have all these such negative ideas. And I'd look and say, "Prabhupada sees devotee. He sees this person, he's helping me." Like he told Hanuman, in Hanuman ex-Maharaj, when in Mexico City, he was ashamed to even come before Prabhupada. And Prabhupada invited him now. He was a grihastha. He named his child Abe. Abe. And Prabhupada just nodded. He said, "Can I still serve? Can I do service?" Prabhupada said, "Definitely," he said. He said, "I need all the help I can get." Prabhupada was interested in his helping him spread this mission. Everything, he said, "Chant your rounds if you have to complete them the next day. Anything, get your rounds done," he said. But what he liked to see is how we were helping him spread this Krishna consciousness movement around the world. This is the best service we can do. Whether it's the month of Purushottama, month of Kartik, whatever month it is, whatever day it is, his business was always the same. Devotee asked me, and I mentioned yesterday, we didn't have any of these things. Ekadasis we observed. We fasted from our beans, grains and beans. That was it. And devotees asking me, "Which spices? Is it okay to use this spice?" No one ever told me anything. I was using whatever spices were available in a temple, whether it was Ekadasi. "Can you use this vegetable, that vegetable?" Prabhupada would say, "Don't be a vegetable. Do something. Eat your vegetables." I said, "What did he tell? What did he tell Hari Kesh when he was telling him to go to Russia?" Hari Kesh didn't want to go, huh? Just like Tamal Krishna Maharaj didn't want to go to China. He knew it was difficult. It was going to be very difficult. Prabhupada said, "Go to Russia." So Prabhupada, "There's nothing to eat there." And it was true. He said, "What if there's just meat to eat?" Prabhupada said, "Eat meat, but go and preach." When will we understand what Prabhupada wanted? We manufacture so many things to divert ourselves from preaching activities. Eating this, not eating this, on this day do this, this day do this. This day just preach. That's what Prabhupada wants. And if you think you can't get Krishna consciousness through him, then you have no business here. If Do you think there's something better outside, figuring some other method to become Krishna conscious other than what he gave us? You don't understand anything. You haven't understood. That's what Prabhupada would say. Just do your work for Krishna. Do your preaching. Do your chanting. This is what's going to save us. 10,000 years. You think Prabhupada wrote these books just for while he was here? He spent every day, every night, hours and hours. He said, painstakingly, every word. You think he did it just for a few people, for a few years? He did it for all generations, these books. So our business is to read the books and to give out the books. This is our real preaching. Somehow or other, help people come to the shelter of Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. You have any questions today? Krishnamurti Prabhu. Heat. We had no heat. Yes. I said we ate, that was Ted Patrick. They sleep on the floor. They eat on wax paper on the floor. We did in some temples. Sometimes you had those prison plates. You know, the prison, you have them here too, those sectional stainless steel plates. That's what they use in prisons. So they would buy them in the temples because then there was no constant expense. You would have your personal plate. But I remember being in Dallas and Los Angeles up in that upstairs there. We would all sit, 50, 100 devotees. They literally just put down a piece of wax paper on the floor. And once they put the rice there and the dal there, it would start seeping right through the paper. You couldn't move. If you moved it, everything would just fall apart. But we didn't care about any of these things. We just wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. And we please him by helping him in this mission and by taking care of each other. He did that as well. Preaching was there between us. I told you, and he took care of me lying on the floor with malaria when no one else cared. And he would say, get him a bed. Call the doctor. It had to go right to the top. But if we're not learning these things, then what good is all your fancy chanting you're doing? You chant 24 hours a day, but if you don't learn what it is to be a Vaishnava, to be a devotee, then what is your chanting doing for you? So many offenses we're making between ourselves. Yes, there is no heat, no air conditioning for sure. Prabhupada, here in August, September, just like it is now. And when the fans went out, there was no generators. There was no backup systems. You'd go for hours. I remember being with Prabhupada. I would go to a shower every hour. And that also wasn't a relief because the water was hot. It's still like that. You turn on the water, there's no cold, cool water. It's hot. But these are just inconveniences, that's all. So we can do a little service. Okay.
Prabhupada also mentioned that, you know, if you're Westerners, you have your lifestyle, so you have certain values. How do you maybe justify the mind, or maybe I'm feeling on Prabhupada? You said, Prabhupada said this.
He was very, he had, you know, I mean, it's a fact. Prabhupada, when he was here, said Vrindavan wasn't for householders. He wanted to say, well, go to Mayapur. You know, Mayapur was for the grahasthas. He said the farms were for grahasthas at different times. He said, if you're not preaching, you should live on the farms. This is his way, put the people on the farms, which we also never established. And here in Vrindavan and Mayapur, he wanted us to be very pukka, you know, first class. He said, because we're always being watched, in particular because we were white-skinned. We're watching everything we're doing. He said, so, like in Mayapur, I always tell the, when he was standing on his balcony and he just saw male devotee and female devotee. They were just talking. And Prabhupada saw them talking. And he turned to me. He said, what is this fish-fish? Called a fish-fish. He said, just, you know, because it just looked very comfortable. He said, this is the dham. This was the dhams. He said, you have to be extra special careful here in these places. As far as comfort, Prabhupada wasn't against whatever we require. Again, I say, on the one hand, it was here Prabhupada said, my whole lunch he cooks 45 minutes. But at the same time, Prabhupada had his massages, morning massage, evening massage. So whatever we need to keep our health, that was priority. That was first priority. Then, of course, you're chanting and doing your service. And but we should, he likes simple. Prabhupada showed simple. We do what we need to do. And he knew the Westerners needed comfortable. I've told when he had the opening here, he wanted to see that we were comfortable, that we had everything we needed, that we ate nicely. And he stressed milk. Again, he stressed that we all had everything we needed, but we had to have nice cow's milk. He shipped ghee from Australia for the devotees here. So we knew there are certain minimal things that were required. Nice prasadam. He said sumptuous. It just meant very, very tasty. We had yesterday after class, I had this sabji, maha prasadam sabji. It was just delicious. It was sumptuous. It was so tasty. You know, I can't make anything like that. You know, it's a fact. I put the same things together and they don't turn out like that. Prabhu's right there in the corner. He cooked it. It's first class. So that's it. And you have that here for the devotees. They get very nice prasadam. Everyone gets nice prasadam. Everyone has a nice place to stay. But in return, you have to do something. Not just try to enjoy a comfortable lifestyle. That's not our business. That's not what we want. Like Prabhupada said, I just want to go back home, back to Godhead. Back home and eat kachuri and luglu with Krishna. That's what he wanted to do. That's what we want to do. Not sit here and try to enjoy things. But do what we need to do so we can go back and be with Krishna and Balaram, the cowherd boys, the cows, and the calves. That's what we look towards. Yes. Where is everyone? I'm as a temple president, your business is to see we're all here, even me. I'm going to do my best. Be here. I have a nice 3-day track record, Mangal Arti in class. By your prayers, I'm going to be here for the next month. That's what we should. So we have to encourage everyone to come to these programs. This was Prabhupada's program. He called it the routine. Routine program is most important. Otherwise, what are we doing in the temple? We have no business living in the temple if we think we're above these things. Prabhupada attended the classes. He required us to attend the classes. He required his big, big leaders to be at Mangal Arti, to be at the classes. It's our business, yes. And he said, if you do that, he said, then you're protected. See, that was our protection, the morning program. He said, then you can go out all day and mix with anyone, give Krishna to others, because you're protected. Then you come back and again, you put that other layer. There's also evening program was there. So that was Prabhupada's style. So many things can happen after that, but this was Prabhupada laid out over years. It wasn't just something fabricated. And no, he started when I was there from 71. It was going on, and he was part of it every day until he left us. He wanted to see what was going on. So he said in the temples, this is just, it's automatic. Yes. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.